And hello, welcome to Scots Radio. I'm Frieda Morrison, and it just doesn't seem that long ago I was describing the parks of barley and the waving grain wide o'er the plain. Now the barley has been hirsted, the stray stackit and biggit, and the ploughman and the plough has gone in, and the turning of the year has started again. And we're just about into the season of Miss Fruits and Berries. Fit will this season bring? Well, it's going to bring a lot of events and special concerts, and I'll tell you more about that later. I was in East Ayrshire recently, in Cumnock to be exact, at the annual Scots Language Awards organised by Simon Toomier and his team at Hands Up for Trad. Fit an echt wee head. But in honour of us a being in Ayrshire and his famous son Robert Burns, this is one of my favourite Burns songs. This is Leslie Hale singing The Ploughman.
Ploughman, he's a bonny lad, his mind is ever true, Joe. His garter's knit below his knee, his bonnet, it is blue, Joe. Then up we all, my ploughman lad, hey, my merry ploughman. Of all the trades that I do ken, commend me to the ploughman. My ploughman, he comes home at e'en, he's often wet and weary. Cast off the wet, put on the dry, and gay to bed, my dearie. Then up with all my ploughman lad, hey, my merry ploughman. Of all the trades that I do ken, commend me to the ploughman. And I will wash my ploughman's hose, and I will dress his old lay, and I will mark my ploughman's bed, and cheer him late and early. Then up with all my ploughman lad, hey, my merry ploughman. Of all the trades that I do ken, commend me to the ploughman. I hae been east, I hae been west, I hae been at St Johnston. The bonniest sight that e'er I saw was the ploughman laddie dancing. Snow white stockings on his legs and siller buckles glancing. A good blue bonnet on his head, and oh, but he was handsome. Then up with all my ploughman lad, hey, my merry ploughman. Of all the trades that I do ken, commend me to the ploughman. Commend me to the barn yet and the corn moo man. I never got my coggy foo till I met with the ploughman. Then up with all my ploughman lad, hey, my merry ploughman. Of all the trades that I do ken, commend me to the ploughman.
Leslie Hale with the ploughman by Robert Burns. Songs recorded for the complete songs of Robert Burns, produced by Fred Freeman at Pier Hoos Studios in September 1997. Ooh, bonny song and a great singer. And let me introduce the captain of this ship. For as equally bonny, the lad that steers us through the wiggly waves, or tries to, is B&B Studios in Edinburgh. Come in, Mr. Richard Werner. Rich, you there?
Okay, how are we doing? We're here.
I'm pleased to hear you there. Just to let folk in, we've had one of these perfect storms this morning. For we couldn't get anything to work, but we've got this. We've got all the budgies lined up and all the plastic bandies joined up.
Now, held together with gaffer tape. Cracking.
Richie, Pier Hoos Studios again, yes, Richie. That's where you started, wasn't it?
That is just like, it's like a mecca for me, that place. Yeah, I started in studios at Pier Hoos. And in fact, I worked with Fred Freeman and Peter Haig much later on in the Burns series. I joined Volume 10, and that was me, Baptism of Fire, all the folk luminaries of the day and the age. And I've never looked back.
That is lovely. Well, events, Richie, fit a busy time we've had. And before I get any further, can I say a very big thank you to you and Louisa and the Bairns for your hospitality a couple of weeks ago.
Geez, wasn't it just bra having you down? So there you go.
Oh, it was fine to see you. And my two programme guests sitting and listening to this thinking, what they're speaking about? Well, guests are Jim McIntosh and Claire Yule, creative director at Barak Clan Scots Language Theatre Company. Mair about that in a minty. Welcome, both of you. Beth, say hello. Are you there?
Hello.
I'm so glad to hear your voices. Jim, you okay?
I'm here, over. Yes.
Thank you, over and out. Let me tell you.
I just pulled the wire a wee bit tighter just to make sure you can hear me.
That's a wee spuggies on the lines, Max. I'm just going to tell you for the big pal where Richie is.
Oh.
A couple of weeks ago, I had the pleasure and honour of being a guest at the 40th anniversary party of the Scottish Poetry Library held at Embra Castle. Now, Richie,
no,
ran me up to the castle and picked me up at night for the party.
Personal taxi
for
service?
For the party, folks. More than I say, he's a big pal.
Okay.
Can you say more than that?
On behalf of the nation, thank you for doing that, Richie.
Yeah. It's my public duty has been fulfilled.
You got our home safe, that's the main thing.
Exactly.
Jim had to do the same for me, just the work for him to pick me up at the Perth station to do to come down and then drop me off at Perth station. I've just had a great time of being picked up and dropped off.
We were driving home at 30 miles an hour. We had so much to blather about. It was brilliant.
Oh, that's nice.
Goodness, we never stopped. Let me take this opportunity to say congratulations to the Scottish Poetry Library and Director Asif Khan for the hospitality and Ali Heather for hosting it. It was a very special gathering, and you can find a link to poets reading their poems on the Scottish Poetry Library website to commemorate the library's special birthday, and it is a treasure, I can tell you. And I met so many folk. I hadn't seen a foe for a long time at the Castle Gathering. Liz Niven and Valentina Bold. Hello again. Great company. And speaking of great company, as I mentioned earlier, the annual gathering for the Scots Language Awards was held at Cumnan Toon Hall in East Ayrshire, hosted and produced by Simon Toomer and the team for Hands Up for Trad. In conjunction this year with East Ayrshire Council, Lord Provost Jim Todd gave a great welcome at the start of it. It was a unique event. For talent and good humour, ably and beautifully presented by Shane Strachan and Taylor Dyson, with great aplomb. Writers, teachers, musicians, poets, dramatists and broadcasters are met to celebrate their lead and congratulate the nominees and the winners. There was 11 categories, as well as two special awards. Liz Niven was presented with the Scots Champion Award and Rab Wilson the Janet Paisley Award for services to Scots. And my guests this episode were also amongst the winners. Let me welcome again, for his shed in Perth, the winner of the Writer of the Year Award, Mr. Jim McIntosh. Come in again, Jim. Hi.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Scriver of the Year or Writer of the Year. I was genuinely surprised to win that. I mean, amongst all the writers that were there, this Willie Hershaw sitting too long for me, just a legend in Scots writing. So, fair chuffed. I've been varying it by saying I'm fair chuffed, pleased, cricket, just them all. I was even on STV on the Monday. That was a hoot. All 25 seconds, but it was brilliant.
On your cell, Jim.
And welcome again, Claire Yule, Creative Director of Brachlan, the Scots Language Theatre Company. And Claire, congratulations on Brachlan winning the award for Scots Community Project of the Year. On behalf of the team, well done for that. And it was a pleasure
Thank
to meet you.
You
last.
Oh, you too. And it was, we were the same as Jim. We were thunderstruck. We thought we were just going down to kind of dip our toes in the water and meet folk at Cumnock. And then to actually get our names called out was extraordinary. So we were just delighted, absolutely delighted.
On behalf of the team, thank you to Hands Up for Trad and our sponsors, Trax, for awarding our Doric Film Festival with the awards for Scots Cultural Project of the Year. Say appreciated. Claire, you said you were thunderstruck. I was speechless. Namely that I couldn't have found my way onto the stage. Why? I'll explain our thing. I couldn't see if our folk was gone in, you see, because I was sitting behind the biggest person in the hall and I couldn't see anything. But I saw the announcements on the stage, but now how folk were getting... Anyway.
I know. It was a little bit tricky getting up there, but you gave a beautiful acceptance speech. It was lovely.
I could have said mayor, but maybe it was a good thing I didn't, on that occasion. See, appreciated anyway.
You were sitting next to me. I had to nudge you to say, Frieda, are you not going up?
You better go up and get it.
I couldn't believe it, because I was kind of taking note for other folks to, you know, so I could trace our thing. I was dumbfooned. Never have my phone been so dumb. Thank you. And more information about Firewind fit on the Hands Up for Trad website. But just to remind you, right, I've made a special note on Abdi, so just hug back a wee bit. Because I need to mention, folk, for the winners as well. Well, here are the winners again. Right, are you ready? Jim, you took the Scots Writer of the Year, as we said, and the Scots Book of the Year, sponsored by the Scottish Book Trust, is Poems by Len Penny. That was a lovely thing, wasn't it? The award for Scots Bairns Book of the Year, sponsored by the Scottish Government, was given to Riverbank Primary Summer Imagic Scurry. The book was written by the Primary 5F class at the school in Aberdeen. Congratulations to Abby there. And local teacher Danielle McNulty from Newcomnock Primary School in East Ayrshire was named Scots Teacher of the Year, sponsored by the Scottish Qualifications Authority. And Newcomnock Primary School was also awarded Scots School of the Year, thanks to their dedication to showcasing the Scots language as part of their curriculum. And the award is sponsored by Itchy Coo and Black and White Publishing. As I said, the Doric Film Festival won the award for Scots Cultural Project of the Year, and it was sponsored by Trax. And the Scots Educational Project of the Year award was presented to the Open University's Scots Language Teacher Professional Learning Programme. And the course is designed to upskill teachers of any subject and allow them to incorporate Scots language and culture into the classroom. Scots Language Theatre Company, Bracklan from Lanarkshire, was named Scots Community Project of the Year. Ray, Claire, Ray.
Ray.
The group marks dripping new plays in Scots inspired by the history of people of Clydesdale for rural audiences in southern Scotland. And this year's Scots Stage Production of the Year award went to Sunset Song by Dundee Rep Theatre in co-production with the Royal Lyceum Theatre in Edinburgh. And Martin O'Connor from Glasgow was named Scots Performer of the Year, sponsored by Trax. Okay, over the page. And Rudy Hawkins took home the Young Scots Writer of the Year award, sponsored by Education Scotland. I hope I've got Abdi in there. If I missed somebody out, my apologies. My fear is I could miss somebody out. Right, Jim, Claire, sit with the highlights for you. Jim first.
Oh, the highlights. Well, other than being dumbfounded to win the award, obviously. I think for me, the overall thing that I took away was how many other folk are just ploughing along, celebrating the lead, and not actually kenning each other. You know, there was so much energy, especially about the scales and the scale bearings for me, and all of that, that it's in good hands. That collective sort of energy and passion for what we do was evident when you saw all of those folk that didn't ken each other. I mean, I knew of Brocklan, I'd heard what you were doing, but to see you there was a joy, to see all of those folk that are just doing the same thing. And if you bundle all that together, we're in safe hands. I think what I would only point out, another thing was, I think Billy Kay with Claire Hastings, particularly when they did the wee bit tribute to Ferguson, was just a piece of beautiful stage theatre. It was just lovely.
Yes, absolutely. And Claire, fit about you, fit were your highlights?
Oh, very much the same. It was just a wonderful, electric kind of feel in the place. It was so exciting to be part of it. And everything that Jim says, but also the all those different performances. As a actor myself and a theatre maker, I'm always interested in how you animate an evening like this so that it's not just giving out awards, which is mm-hmm. good and so on. And the acceptance speeches I'm always fascinated by. But the way that they interwove bits of performance, the Claire Hastings, my Martin Travers, who's my colleague at Brocklan, who writes, who's our playwright and our creative producer, was nothing short of starstruck when he met Claire backstage. And you had to practically drag him onto the stage to get the award because he was like, that's Claire Hastings.
Oh, lovely.
There was Susie Briggs, there was Rose Byers, there was Billy Kay, obviously, Jim's, you know, all the different bits of spoken and sung Scots, and the music was just gorgeous. So it was this shimmering, positive experience. I felt it was, we just came away feeling, God, that was such a lovely night out together, along with folk who are working in their different ways towards the same goals that we are, which was just wonderful.
Oh, Claire, you've just summed it up beautifully. Jim, you want to say something here?
No, I just exactly that what Claire said. You're not alone, you know, for all the dogs have used that some folk seem to get more disproportionate than others, but especially in the infernal swamps of social media. But I think when you see particularly the work that's been done in community projects and the like, I think it's just a wonderful thing to come together. It's a shame they couldn't have mere winners, you know, because they're all winners, really, at the end of the day.
Aye.
And you've done us the honour of writing a special poem for this programme about that event, the Scots Language Awards at Cumnock Toon Hall. Jim, are you ready?
All right, I'll read you this. Just a wee bit at the start of it, of course, is I don't know how many folk would ken it, but there's the bust of an old chiel at the front of the hall out on the street. And it's actually Keir Hardie. So this is entitled Keir Hardie's Neb. It might have he'n been the dreich mizzle about his neb, making himself look mair crabbit than I mind it, for my ainly ever foreboding dalliance with Cumnock. Yet Keir Hardie had a glower of yon dark fueled rebellion. My forefathers shudders ahent his cause, yet for now his bearded nobility was laser focused on the Chinese Takawa over the road, and no muckle caring for the clatter of screevers, mackers, and the flashbulb glitterati with the next affair, weaving their stooshy into bubbly fizzing stardom or mere light, as maesters expect it, the sky into the orchestra pit with a shortlisted scunner. And oh, and they teetered, Aiblins no kenning it, but the smedum of the lead had folded itself on her lapels and in the corners of pooches, waiting for a perfect moment, louping up on stage with glee after the lang way roon, past mony ghosts biding in the wings. The Bay City Rollers whispering, shang along, along with Ayrshire's finest for the miners' strike. And Mick McGahey, hodden court, counting the show unanimous despair, horns of lads fear to Thatcher's spite for days ahead. But for now, the same stage buzzing in a different way, buzzing with the energy of folk proud of their lead. And afore long into the spotlight with names, new revealed for the siller envelopes, a trick missed of sponsorship for Baco Foil or Haribo. And then with beezers of smiles, folk pausing, waiting for their name, no kenning to cheer or greet. Then the longest applause ever afore a puckle words of thanks, fair prude and hodding the finest dod of wid ever carve it and scrive it. Scots Language Awards 2024 winner. Ah, Nick, the jig was up and on, tunes and songs, words of glad hearts, tellings by screevers and mackers weave it with a haily light nod of respect to Ferguson, and ah, the tragedies we ticky life. The vice of Burns Tay, whispering into the air aboon ah, the generations gather together, nudging shudders, encouraging the tap of money a tay, proffering a hanky's edge for tears of joy enabling the odd disappointment. Yet the hail wheech of emotions raise at the waters of spurtling joy. Mac and share our carrying stream would never be a dry bed of ancient irrelevance. Would I hae another handful of pebbles drap it softly into its white? And as we embrace it, our pals, old and new, made promises to hug the lead up for the morn's bairns, to tell they most grieve at legions, to keep our pens sharp and most important, let the glisking spirit of this nicht flee far and awa' to settle into the hopes and dreams of us all. I couldn't help but sense the wicht of all. The poor of my pen to make a difference. I yont the fower was of my ain comfort. For we're a' on the same tourist. Ain vice, ain scrieve, ain lead. And ah, the cinderings of time, bekissed and ken, settling thoughts in a twain stain and heart. Sic a braw clan, sic a common weal on nation's folk. And Keir Hardie, ah, he kent a' the time. And wi' a wee hint o' a smile and his ain sculpted way, bid us a' good nicht and safe travels doon the waters of the carrying stream. As he wandered across the road into the Takawa for his haggis supper and curry sauce.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you for reminding me that Bay City Rollers were on that stage, neither. really long ago, many years, maybe many years ago, I can't remember. But that lovely poem. And music for the moment. Singer Claire Hastings was one of the superb performers at the awards, as Claire mentioned there. And this is Claire with a song for her Lullabies from Scotland album. This is a Matt McGinn song. This is Cootie Doon, the Miner's Lullaby.
Cootie Doon, Cootie Doon, Cootie Doon, my darling, Cootie Doon the day. Cootie Doon, Cootie Doon, Cootie Doon, my darling, Cootie Doon the day. I turn, my dear, and in your ear to help you close your eye. I'll sing a song, a slumber song, a miner's lullaby. Cootie doon, cootie doon, cootie doon, my darling, cootie doon the day. Cootie-doon, cootie-doon, my darling, cootie-doon the day. Your daddy's doon the mine, my darling, doon and the car'll be mine. Your daddy's howkin' call, my darling, for his ain wee wain. Cootie-doon, cootie-doon, my darling, cootie-doon the day. Cootie-doon, 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 my darling, cootie-doon the day.
Claire Hastings with the Matt McGinn song Cootie Doon for her Lullabies from Scotland album. And can I just mention that Matt was a pal of mine from my early days as an up-and-coming folk singer. I used to hate to back Matt McGinn and try and find the key that he just started off singing in. And he was renowned for that. But I had great fun trying to back Matt McGinn in various concerts. Right. Claire Hastings was one of the performers at the Scots Language events in Cumnock Toon Hall, and Claire was sharing the stage with writer Billy Kay. More about that in a minute. And you're listening to Scots Radio. I'm Frieda Morrison. In the wheelhouse is Richie Werner.
Aye, aye.
And my special guests are writer Jim McIntosh and Claire Yule for the Brooklyn Scots Language Theatre Company. Claire, I ken you have to leave us soon, but tell us a bit more about Brooklyn.
Well, Brooklyn is, I think I'm right in saying at the moment, we're the only specialist Scots language theatre company in the country, maybe in the world, in fact. We've not heard of anyone else that's doing exactly what we are doing. There's other companies that make theatre in Scots, but we only make theatre in the Scots language with English woven in, and we're making new theatre. So we're as much as we revere the plays of the past you mentioned Ferguson earlier. We did a rehearsed reading of a play about Robert Ferguson. But in general, we're looking to add to the Scots drama canon. So we started in 2021. Our founding members are all theatre makers, actors, musicians, composers. Paul Roger, who's our wonderful production manager and stage manager. We all live round about bigger down here in South Lanarkshire. And for years, We all knew each other, and we'd see each other occasionally when we were on jobs and things elsewhere. But for years we were saying, we should really do something. We should really, you know, it never came to anything. And then Martin Travers, who at that time was working for The Sits, he's our playwright and our creative producer. He kind of got the bit between his teeth and said, right, how about we make not just any theatre company, but a Scots language theatre company? And I have to say, that's when my ears pricked up, because when I was young, when I was sort of in my teens, I was lucky enough to be at school just towards the end of high school at the time when the Browns Bank residency, you know, to do with Hugh McDiarmid, just outside Biggar, was really kicking off. So I was taught by people like James Robertson and Matthew Fitt, and we were really hothoused at that time, I would say. And I was sort of fifth, sixth year. Because we showed a bit of interest and we were to do with the theatre workshop as well, we got taken to all sorts of wonderful things. We went and saw flightings in Edinburgh, and we were given books. We were encouraged to write in Scots and read in Scots. And so it was this period of about maybe 2 or 3 years. We did things like Philotas, which I don't know if you'll have heard of, but it's the oldest Scots comedy in existence. And that was, we did that at the Corn Exchange, which is the amateur theatre company in Biggar. And so we did this mad, you know, 400 and odd year old play in Scots rhyming couplets and roughs and stuff. And it was incredible. And we did a drama version of Lynn Mill and, you know, the Lynn Mill stories by Robert McClellan and so on. And I have to say that, being as stupid as I was at that time, I just thought that's what it was like. I just thought that probably that everywhere looked after and was as interested in the Scots language as Biggar was at that time. And then I went on to the Royal Conservatoire and trained as an actor, and I quickly realised that no, that's not the case at all, and that what I had experienced was really special. So that was kind of my early grounding in Scots, as well as obviously from my granny and on both sides, my granny and papa and my gran Mac, and my parents and so on. But that, so there was that period of real just immersion in the Scots language and realising that you're bilingual and all those wonderful things that come to you when you're just kind of starting out. And then that went underground for a long time. And then, so when Martin came to us in 21 and said, how about a Scots language theatre company? I thought all my Christmases had come at once, because wow, that's just exactly what I wanted to do.
Now, Claire, you mentioned Robert Ferguson there. How did you deal with Robert Ferguson? How did you put that on stage?
So we were lucky enough to get funding from something called the National Lottery Extended Programme Fund, which is administered by Creative Scotland, at the beginning of the year. And that allows us to develop a series of pieces over the next 2 years. It's really exciting to be able to do that. It gives us it's an amazing launch pad for new projects. And as one of them, Martin has always wanted to write about Robert Ferguson, because obviously there's Burns and so on. And Martin has written a play about Burns. As part of that research, he'd found out a lot about Ferguson, and Burns, as you'll know, called him his brother in the muse and so on. So, and that got him interested in telling Ferguson's story, because it seems to be so forgotten. And to Martin and to us as well, I can see what he's talking about. He says that Robert Ferguson has this James Dean type quality. He's obviously a terribly charismatic young man who has had an enormous outsized impact in his short life, and who we lost far too soon. So he's always wanted to write something about him. And the Extended Programme Fund allowed us to do that in the form of a rehearsed reading, although it was quite a ritzy rehearsed reading. So it actually had like 15 people in it. It had community actors, it had student actors in. And we staged it in Bigger and in Crawford in Lead Hills in June. The actors still had their scripts in their hands. It wasn't fully performed, but there was beautiful original music in it by John Keelty. It was directed by Jordana O'Neill, who's got a special interest in these types of projects. And the reaction was just bananas. People loved it. And to the point where we're thinking, well, we now need to do something with Crown of Straw. Yeah, it has to go on in some form.
Definitely, because we're celebrating the 250th anniversary.
Exactly.
He died on the 16th of October, maybe something you can
correct. That's right, yeah.
250 years ago.
Yes, and so we teamed up. Our academic partner on the project was Professor Rona Brown at the University of Glasgow, yeah. and Dr. Amy Wilcoxon, who helped Martin with the research for it. And it was just wonderful. There's a wee film, if anyone's interested, there's a wee film on the Brockland website where you can see snippets from the show and also audiences' reactions. And Rona, bless her, is just greeting. She just cried for about half an hour, I think, after the whole, because that's having spent so long thinking about Ferguson and understanding him and all of those things. I think seeing him brought to life in that way by this wonderful actor, Kieran McKenzie, was really moving for her. So we were so proud of it.
Claire, I am so pleased that you've managed to be with us today, because this is exactly what we need to hear about and promote and help you promote this. This is really important stuff. Oh. Future plans. Again, you've just had So Long, Little Moon. How did that go?
So Long, Wee Moon. So this is our second full-scale play. Our first play was called Secret Wrapped in Lead. That was last year. And it was a dramatisation of Dorothy Wordsworth's visit to Lead Hills in 1803. And that did incredibly well. It was like a complete sellout, you know, and got great reviews, all of that. So we thought we'd try and see if we could do it again. And I'm very pleased to say that we have. So Long, Wee Moon is our new play. It's set in the early 1920s in Crawford John. And it tells the story of Nancy Gibbs, who is a young woman whose life is all mapped out for her, as many women's lives would have been at that time. She's meant to marry a farmer and settle down and look after her family, and her family is living in terrible poverty at the time. But she doesn't want to do any of that. What she wants to do is go and be an actor. She goes to Hamilton Picture House and it basically turns her head. She imagines a different future for herself and for her wee sister. And so the play follows her through that journey, and she manages it without giving it too much away. She does go, she does become an actress, but it doesn't work out for her very well, and she comes back. So that story is the one that we're telling at the moment, and it's a hit. We've got great reviews in the Scotsman and the Herald. It's completely sold out. The feedback from audiences is crazy. So it feels wonderful to be able to be back out there with a new story and for it to be so well received.
And another new story is on the stocks with Joyce Faulkner. Tell us about that.
Soup in a Story, I think what we call it more is more than a production, is it's our community programme. So that's something that happens once a month, and it's a lovely session where we go into a lunch club, which is usually for older people, and the project pays for their lunch. So they get a hot meal, they get soup and cake and a cup of tea and so on. And we have just lively conversation for an hour or so, which is amazing. And then at the end of that, the people there get a free live performance in the Scots language by a professional actor. And my way to do it today, it started last month, and we had the brilliant Caroline McEwen, and this month we've got Joyce Faulkner at the Gillespie Centre in Bigger, and then she's coming to do another one for us tomorrow in Roberton. And it's just a lovely time together in a way. It's relaxed, it's fun. Joyce will do her performance. It's one of the Lynn Mill stories. It's not always a Lynn Mill story, but it's often a Lynn Mill story by one of the excellent Robert McClellan. And that has a connection down here, obviously, because Kirkfield Bank's not that far away. So she'll read that story for about 15 minutes. And then today she's going to do a wee song as well, because she's got such an amazing voice. And then we have a chat with the audience about the story, about things that come up, about people's memories. And it's just a lovely...
It's a great idea.
Yeah, it is.
Simple, but
a gorgeous time.
And Joyce will just be superb. Look, I'm conscious of your time, Claire. I'm really delighted you could join us. But before you go, how can folk find out more about Brockland?
If you go to thebrockland.com. You'll see all the different things that we're doing. So our play, So Long We Moon, finishes in a week. It finishes on the 28th of September. But there's some audio resources. We're working with a brilliant lady called Dr. Pamela Jenkins to make some little, like, almost like mini podcasts that will sit on the website about the characters in So Long We Moon. So even if you miss the show, that'll be up in a sort of week or so. And then there's Soup in a Story, which goes all the way through to next February. And I'm sure we'll think of some other things to do. If we can manage to get them funded, we've certainly no short of ideas. So,
well, Claire, it's been a delight hearing you on the programme. And please come back. We need to hear more about what you're doing, because this is really important work you're doing.
Oh, I'd be delighted to. Thanks.
And sorry for keeping you back again. You're going to be late for your
next appointment. Not at all. Not at all. It's a pleasure. Thank you so much.
See you soon.
Thanks now. Bye-bye.
Bye. Richie, Jim, that was just a treat.
It just gives me a fair, just renewed vigour if I needed it for and a wee string and a spring in my step for the rest of the day. You know what strikes me about that, Frieda, is it's the wonderful weave and blend of respect to our history, our culture in terms of Ferguson and revisiting that, and actually doing new stuff, to doing new works.
Aye.
You know, that nod of respect backwards, you know.
Yep, it's exactly that.
That's important, but and it's important to have that kind of grounding in it. And I think, as Claire had said herself there, she was awfully lucky to hear that. And as she said herself, didn't really kind of understand that she had that with like Sir James Robertson and Matthew and good friends of mine. But the thing is, for me, is that they're now tacking that with great confidence to say, folk wanted to hear that. And Ferguson comes alive when you lift it off the page.
Definitely.
And you hear it in that setting. And you, well, there you are, they sell out.
You're going to hear more about that in a minute.
It's brilliant. I love it. Love it. Love it.
Now, earlier we heard the song and singer Claire Hastings. For I was one of the performers at the Scots Language Events in Cumnocton Hall. Now, Claire was sharing the stage with writer and broadcaster Billy Kay. Billy was giving us extracts from his new book, Born in Kyle, and Other Bits for By, as you'll hear. Before the ceremony started, I got a chance to speak to Billy a bit about this auspicious occasion. Hi, Billy. The event is about to start. We're waiting for the provost, for the official start of the Scots Language Awards. Now, this being in Ayrshire, what does this mean to you tonight?
Well, I'm pleased for Ayrshire that it's here. It's about time it came here. And to me, they should be going to Ilka Airt and Pairt of the Country to do this. But because of the Burns connection, you're in the heart of the Burns country here, and you're in one of the strongest Scots-speaking areas in Scotland, here in East Ayrshire. I'm from Goston, so I was brought up speaking at 99% of the time, and it's the same in Cumnock where the awards are being held. So if you want a place that's steeped in the Scots tradition of spoken language and of the literary language and of the songs, you couldn't come to a better place.
But you have long since left this part of Ayrshire. What does it mean to coming back to your home?
Well, it's great when you're speaking in Scots to ken that ilka word will be understood and nobody will have to strain their lugs to hear everything you're saying. It's good for that point of view. And it's good because of the cultural references too. I'm doing some reading for Born in Kyle about somebody talking about the literature.
Your own book.
The main
book.
We
spoke about the beginning this year.
That's right. Gosh. Did a great interview. So I'm doing a reading for a man that's based in the grandfather I never kent, because he was a minor and he died in his 60s or respiratory diseases. So I never kent either of my grandfathers. Both were minors. One Fife, one Ayrshire. So there's a story called War the Airts, which is about him talking about the literature and the songs, especially Burns, that he grew up with. So tonight I'm reading for that, and Claire Hastings, a great singer for Dunheim, for Dumfriesshire, is going to be singing War the Airts, The Wind Can Blow, and Ramsay's The Lass of Patey's Mill. And in the second half, we're commemorating Robert Ferguson.
No, I was going to speak about that.
250 years.
Just put, I came within a hell of a time because we're waiting on folk. But Try and put in a nutshell what Robert Ferguson means to us.
Ferguson, Burns described Ferguson as by far my elder brother in misfortune, by my elder brother in the muse. So he was Guy influential on Robert Burns. Burns pied for his heat stain in the Canongate Kirkyard. So it's appropriate that there's a Ferguson connection here in Ayrshire. When I did Ferguson's Auld Reekie back in the 1980s, it was performed in Edinburgh, and the only other place it was performed in Scotland was here in New Cumnock, in a hotel nearby organised by the New Cumnock Burns Club. So they're guy aware that it's not just Robbie Burns, it's Ferguson tea. So I'm chuffed that I'm going to be reading a bit of Ferguson tonight.
Well, congratulations, being here in your hame toon, as they say, or your hame area, and I'm looking forward to the night.
It'll be great.
It'll be great. We're getting half excited inside.
Right.
Well, he then.
Okay.
Writer and broadcaster Billy Kay. And Billy reminded me of a fabulous CD he had produced in 1981 called Ferguson's Auld Reekie, with poetry of Robert Ferguson read by Billy and music and songs for 18th century Edinburgh. And it just so happens that it was in my music library. I bought the CD for the Scots Language Society a while ago, and it's still available. And this CD is a treasure, with music for Tony Cuff, or Ossian, Norman Chalmers, Derek Hoy, and Rod Patterson, then O'Jock Tamson's bairns. This is for that CD, and this is Billy reading the poetry of Robert Ferguson, combined with the music, and I read the notes here. The CD portrays the teeming life of Edinburgh closes, tenements and taverns in the 1770s. The poems are Daft Days and Auld Reekie, and the song The Caller Shades.
O thou great god of aqua vitae, wha sways the empire of this city, when foo were sometimes capernoity, be thou prepared to hedge us frae that black banditti this city cared. Frae joyous tavern reeling drunk, with fiery fizz and e'en half sunk, behold the bruiser, fate o' that in the reek o' gardies fo'. Close by his side, a feckless race o' macaronis show their face, when feet in dirty gutters plash, and folk to wail their footsteps fash. At night, the macaroni drunk, in pools and gutters aftime sunk. Oh, what a fright he now appears when he his corpse dejected rears. Look at that heed, and think if there the pommet slaystered up his hair. The cheeks observe, where now could shine the scansen glories of carmine? Oh, legs! In vain the silkworm there displayed to view her ident care, for stink instead of perfumes grow, and clarty odours fragrant flow. Now some to porter, some to punch, some to their wife, and some their wench, retire, while noisy tenor's drum gars all your trades get donner and hame. Now many a club, jocose and free, gie aw to merriment and glee, with sanging glass they flay the power of care that would harass the hour, for wine and Bacchus still bear down o'er thrawart fortune's wildest frown. It makes ye stark and bald and brave, even when descending to the grave.
I neither want a drink nor dram, when Tom Dick's house was nigh. But now in the Canongate I dwell, a dismal place and dry.
Shades, the colour shades, when I have oft complained, the lucky's bottle CFD was paid the bottom drained.
Hard fate that I should banished be, gang heavily and mourn, because I lewd the warmest dram that e'er in mouth did burn.
Oh, she is a cavern, cavern she is, where I have often lain. A lock is but a sea that he was stayed upon the rain. Adieu, ye cooling shades, adieu. Farewell, my forenoon's chill. My time to expire, I'll set no more. My hour's all to kill.
Oh, the sheets, the cavern, cavern sheets, where I have often but a sea at sea was stayed upon the rain. Oh, the sheets, the callous, callous sheets, where I have oft complained. The luck is but a sea at sea was stayed upon.
Billy Kay with a poem through the CD called Ferguson's All Leaky, produced by Billy Kay in 1981 and music arranged by Tony Cuff, in celebration of the 18th century poet Robert Ferguson, who died on the 16th of October 250 years ago. Jim, that would bring back a lot of memories, etc. Nay, 250 years worth, but you know, that CD is just an absolute classic, isn't it?
I just when you said that there, it's 43 years ago. It's relevant and as fresh as the day it was recorded.
It is,
and it just highlights again for me the importance of poets like Sir Ferguson and beyond the Burns, the Fergusons of the world.
Aye,
the Willie Souters, as you can, I'm fair biased about that, but it's important that we celebrate Ferguson. My family, they get scunnered at, and they warn anybody that if I'm in Edinburgh, didn't let Jim tat you down by the Canongate, because you'll be around the kirk there for about an hour as he tells you all about Ferguson and the importance of him to our culture. It gladdens my heart to hear that Ferguson's been celebrating me.
I should mention that Robert Burns paid for the headstone on Robert Ferguson's grave.
Mm-hmm. I think Billy mentioned that a wee bit in his interview of the influence that Ferguson had on him, and I think it's always minded of Ferguson and the likes when you hear poets of today asked what their favourite poets are, and their first will reach out to their pals round about them, and then maybe out to the more contemporary poets. But it's always a joy to hear somebody maybe add in that Helen Cruikshanks or Violet Jacob or go further back into Ferguson, that they're important.
You should mention that there's a statue of Robert Ferguson in the Canongate as well, and just doing a bit for the storytelling centre.
Every time I pass him, I always stop and I give him a wee tap on the shoulder and say, "Hi, Rab, hope you're doing fine," as I'm heading for the library or whatever, because he's the fact that he's there at all speaks volumes for his importance.
He was 24 years old when he passed away. 24.
He was treated shabbily. There was the understanding there then of mental health, and because he'd taken a fair dunt when he fell and
banged his head as well.
Aye. Yeah.
Right. Can I go back to that CD again, Jim? Because we need to celebrate the 250th anniversary of Robert Ferguson. This is for that CD again, Ferguson's All Leaky. And Ferguson's poem is read by Billy Kay again. This is Colour Oysters. It's a classic, with the tunes The Daft Days, Tullagh Gorum and Tory Burn.
Oh, all the waters that can hobble a fishing yole or salmon cobble, and can reward the fisher's trouble or sooth or north, there's nane, say spacious and say noble, as Firth o' Forth. In her, the skate and codlin sail, the eel foo souple wags her tail, with herring, fluke and mackerel, and whiting's dainty, their spinel shanks the lobster's trail, with barton's plenty. All Dreeky's sons blithe faces wear, September's merry month is near, that brings in Neptune's caller cheer, new oysters fresh, the halesomest and nicest gear of fish or flesh. Oh, then, we needna gie a plaque for donner and mountebank or quack. What other drugs say baldly crack and spread sick notions as gar their feckless patients tack their stinking potions? Come, pray, frail man, for gin thou art sick, the oyster is a rare cathartic, as every doctor patient gart lick to cure his ails. Whether ye hae the heed or hair take, it aye prevails. Ye tipplers, open all your posies, ye who are fast wi' plucky noses, fling o'er your crags efficient dosies, you'll thole a hunner, to fleg awa' your simmer roses, and nothing honour. When big as burns the gutters rin, gin ye hae catched a drookit skin, the lucky middle must sloup in and sit foo snug, our oysters in a dram o' gin, or had our luck. When all St. Giles at 8 o'clock, Gar's merchant loons their shoppies lock, there we adjourn wi' hearty folk to birl oor bottles, and get where we to crack oor joke and clear oor noddles. Old Ricky, thou art the canty hole, a build for money a cauldriff soul, was snugly at thine ingle low, baith warm and couth, while roon they gar the bicker roll to weet their mouth. Then though at odds wi' a' the world, among ourselves we'll never quarrel. Though discord gie a canker snarl to spoil our glee, as lang's their spith into the barrel, we'll drink and gree. Fiddlers, your pins in temper fix, and rose at wheel your fiddle sticks, but banish vile Italian tricks frae out your quorum, nor forties wi' pianos mix. Gie us tullock gorum. Can cheer the hertsy wheel as can a canty healing reel. It even vivifies the heel to skip and dance. Lifeless is he wha canna feel its influence.
Robert Ferguson, read by Billy Kay, music by Tony Cuff, Norman Chalmers, Derek Hoy and Rod Patterson. Fit a great CD. It's called Ferguson's All Leaky. Try and find it. And can I draw your attention to the concert that will celebrate the poems of Robert Ferguson as a rejuvenation of that CD. Features Billy reading the poems of Robert Ferguson again. Musicians and singers include Corinne Polmont, Sarah Hoy, Steve Byrne and Gary West. And the concert will be at the Reed Concert Hall, University of Edinburgh, Bristol Square, on the 16th of November. And it starts at 7 p.m. and tickets through eventbrite.co.uk. and book early, because that'll be a sellout. And the concert lasts for 1.5 hours. So tickets through eventbrite.co.uk. Book early. That is a cracker of a lineup and an idea. Jim, fit a great concert. Richie, that just sounds fabulous.
Yeah, it's going to be a cracker.
It's going to be a cracker. Aye.
That'll be a sellout.
It will be a sellout. Right, Jim, your plans for the new year. What new event are you planning this next year?
How long left have we got? the Banes of the Tourists, the wee musical kind of gathering that myself and Ali Hutton and the gang, it's still touring. We're in Nairn on the 25th of October.
Wow.
I've been working with a fantastic bunch of folk who are to do with the wild pines, the Scots pines of the Western Highlands of the Black Mount, basically, around there in Arcaig and all that sort of direction. And I'm doing a gig. I've written a series of poetry which is going to get weaved about with references and song, like the Praise of Ben Dorn by Duncan Van McIntyre. So there'll be a bit of that in there. And so there's some new poetry been written for that. That's up in Fort William at the end of October. Aye, so busy. Lots of things going on next year.
Ken, how events are just the icing on the cake of our intangible heritage. We need to keep things going. You just get that sense that there's a resurgence of interest and folk doing different things. It was helpful clear just how successful they're doing Brackland. As you said, it just gives a new step in your walking.
Right. For me, it's events like that. It's that old kind of fancy sense of networking.
Aye.
But that's how these things work. There'll be threads of friendships that are strengthened, and all that kind of, literally that fabric is brought together with different folk doing different things. But I mean, there's Billy and the gang way back there doing that 43 years ago.
Aye.
That idea of music and spoken word together, which is...
Well, it's as fresh as a daisy as well, eh?
It's like it's just been done yesterday. You know? And, well, it's going to get done in November.
Aye.
But, yes, indeed.
But there's a reason for that. It's because it's still relevant and it works.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And folk want to hear it, you know.
Well, this is another part of our intangible heritage we're going to move on to now. Maybe just completely different from everything else we've been speaking about, but nay that different. We're going to take another walk up the Lang Road back to a bit of our history. And it's no secret that the Kirk congregations are dwindling and Kirk community groups of our denominations are struggling to keep the Kirk's winning watertight, hence the need to sell the buildings. And at this time, there are literally hundreds of Kirks on the market and mayor to follow in the not-too-distant future. But what happens to the contents of the Kirk? Well, an organisation called Scotland's Churches Trust was set up to preserve the heritage of the churches and the content. And this is for our denominations. When a kirk goes on the market, the movable content has to be recorded and removed before it's sold. And each of the Church of Scotland kirks on the market is at the village of Arbuthnot in the Mearns, just south of Stonehaven. Now, it's each of the oldest kirks in Scotland. And as you'll hear in a minute, it sits in the midst of the area for our renowned writer James Leslie Mitchell, kent as Lewis Grasset Gibbon, based his trilogy Scott Square, that contained the nation's favourite book, Sunset Song, and his ashes are buried in Arbuthnot Kirkyard. But I begin inside the kirk with archaeologist Ali Cameron and Sheila Duffy. First job it is to record the contents of the kirk. First, Ali, far on earth did he begin to record?
So usually Sheila and I have done a recce first, and so we've got an idea of how many things, how many cupboards there are, how many movable objects. And so when we get here, we divide into two, and then you just divide it up. So when we came into Arbuthnot, where we are at the moment, Sheila and one of the other volunteers had said they would really like to do the organ here. Mm-hmm. So they set off doing the organ, and that was all, a lot of the day was done.
God, it's a bit... Massive, beautiful organ.
Beautiful. And the organist was here on that day. Yeah. So, and then others, you know, I said to the archaeology students, I would do the Arbuthnot aisle if I was you, where there's an effigy and various other tombs. And so I sent them off there because they're young and they're keen and they're knowledgeable, and I'm happy to record other things.
So far the church is sold, let's say not to the community. The community is nae taking it over. If it happens to these artefacts.
So at the point that the people buy it, the church, everything inside belongs to them. So at that time, in churches that we know in Aberdeenshire, things of historical value have often been removed. So a church that I recorded where a family had bought it to build into a to make into a house, there'd been a Gordon Highlanders memorial, and it had been moved to a church along the road. And other churches that we've dealt with, things have been moved, important stones and important things. But essentially, once the church has been sold to, say, a family to make into a house, they own everything in it.
Sheila, can I come across to you? This is something that is quite sensitive for many people, because you're dealing with politics at some age and stage, and you're also dealing with a huge amount of sadness for folk as well, aren't you?
It is. I think that's an overwhelming sort of feeling you get from folk, is that they're sad because most of their life has not centred on the church, but it's been an important part of their lives from when they were little.
And I think you mentioned that you were speaking to Keith Lord Arbuthnot just earlier on, and his family have been here for how long?
Oh, well, since about either the late 1100s or the early 1200s, have been in continuous ownership of this estate, and therefore this church.
This church. It means a lot.
Yeah. But then I think what happened in the 1925 Act, that is impressive. Was that the landowners no longer owned the churches as such. So all the churches were handed over in this 1925 Act to the trustees of the Church of Scotland.
Wow.
I know. So it's a difficult kind of one. But it then meant that folk, well, I'm not sure that I understand it all, but it's something about the disruption was part of all this as well, how they got to that point. It's really just about who owned the churches in themselves.
Can we go up on it, just up this, Sheila, and kind of go up to this side, underneath the arch. So fits this part of the Kirk Hall. This is the archway. We're going through the archway. And look at it, it must be.
Oh, what would we call this bit, Ali? So, I mean, this is, would you call this the chancel? Which way are we facing?
That's east, I would think.
East.
That's the important bit of the church. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Why is that important then?
That's traditionally the important part of a medieval church, the east. East for the. I did a course.
So this bit's the oldest bit of the church, they think. And because this is the east, you would call it the choir.
Yeah.
And this is where the high altar would have been prior to the Reformation. So the high altar would have been up in the east. And so people sat around the altars here, the high altar. And people, when they wanted to be buried, they wanted to be buried as close to the high altar as possible. So when you were being buried in a medieval church, if you had a lot of money, you could be buried right near the east end.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, if you had less money, you were buried either in the west end of the church or in the graveyard.
So, it's a question I should have asked early on. How old is this church?
So there's been a church here since at least the late 1100s to early 1200s. And then in the 1500s, quite a lot of work was done to it. So the bit more to the west of the church was altered quite dramatically by the Arbuthnot family.
Yeah.
And they built in around about 1500 the Arbuthnot aisle.
This is the aisle looking out into here, which is beautiful again. So people talk about the missal that was here. Explain to me just what is the missal.
So the missal is, it dates to the late 1400s, and it's actually in Paisley Museum. And I don't know the exact reason why it's in Paisley, but it's one of the oldest religious documents in Scotland. But it includes information about this church, because there's images in it, including an image of the room upstairs, which was like the minister's loft, the priest's sort of loft.
Right, can we take a taxi outside and see if it's... Because, as I've said earlier on, this is far. Lewis Grassett Gibbon, James Leslie Mitchell, is laid to rest, and his ashes are here, somewhere in the graveyard outside. Oh, visitors. Visitors. Oh, God, best one. Hello. Enjoying your visit?
Yes.
Good. Lovely, isn't it?
Struck by the elderly.
So this is leading to another question, Ali. What happens to the graveyard? Far owns the graveyard.
So since 1925, the graveyards have been owned by the councils.
Uh-huh.
So we're in Aberdeenshire Council, so it's owned by... And that's it's maintained by them, so they have a grass cutter.
Right.
And so if a church is sold, mm-hmm. it's sold with just about, 30 or 40 centimetres round the base of the wall
uh-huh.
to allow the new owner to do drainage. But the rest of the graveyard is maintained by and owned by Aberdeenshire Council.
And look at this. We've come... to the corner of the graveyard for the memory of James Leslie Mitchell, Lewis Grassett Gibbon, the 30th of February 1901 till the 7th of February 1935. And it says, the kindness of friends, the warmth of toil, and the peace of rest.
That's amazing. He was only 34.
34, isn't it?
I know.
I couldn't even realize that. So, and then underneath in the same stone, is written the quotation from that famous scene from the minister as he read to the congregation at the memorial stone, and I will give you the morning star. Well, ladies, this has been a fascinating visit to one of the most beautiful kirks that I've ever seen. But as a final statement, Ali, what's going to happen to the kirk?
So this kirk... they're hoping will stay in community use because Keith Arbuthnot, who lives nearby, and the congregation want to retain it, that it's likely that they will be able to purchase it at some point.
Uh-huh.
And it's such a beautiful location.
But listen to the birds.
There's nobody living nearby.
Well, what a grand day we had. My thanks again to Ali Cameron and Sheila Duffy. And as you heard, there are good news, there are plans afoot that will enable the community to buy Arbuthnot Kirk. Watch that space. And more information can be heard on the website scotlandschurchestrust.org.uk. scotlandschurchestrust.org.uk. And get in touch if you fancy becoming a volunteer. The organisation needs your help. They need your help, so volunteer if you can. And more information about more events here. The Scottish International Storytelling Festival will be in full flow this month, based again at the Storytelling Centre in Edinburgh, starting on the 18th of October until the 30th of October. And the theme this year is Bridges Between. I like that title, Bridges Between, featuring events throughout the country. And the booking can be done online, and the festival programme can be seen on the festival website at SISF, S for sugar, I, S for sugar again, F for Frida, .org.uk, SISF.org.uk. And that just about brings us to the end of this session. And one more event I should mention is that the director of the Scottish International Storytelling Festival, Donald Smith, is launching a new book to commemorate the 900th anniversary of Edinburgh. And the launch is at the National Library on the 3rd of October at 6:30 p.m. And the title is Edinburgh, Our Storied Town. And he'll be joined by poet Stuart Corn. And he was the first macker for Edinburgh. And during October and November, the library is hosting a travelling display from Historic Environment Scotland about King David I. King David granted Edinburgh its royal status 900 years ago. Jeez, we've been kind of really sorting out history in this episode. As I said, that brings us to the end of this episode. We've had a busy time, maybe slowed down a bit, taking time to plan for the next festival, the Wigton Book Festival, coming up. Willie Johnson will be reporting for us for that aired. So I'll leave you with a track for a lovely new CD, the fiddle player Alistair Savage and Alice Allen on cello. It's an album card, Where the Good Ship Lands. And we finish with two 18th century tunes written by William Marshall, for Robert Burns described as being the first composer of Strathspeys of the age. I read again through the album notes. The first melody was made famous as the accompaniment to Robert Burns's words for the song about the Scottish Jacobite, William Gordon, Viscount of Kenmure. Oh, Kenmure's on and awa. And the second is Craigellachie Lasses. So a big thank you to our special guests this programme, Claire Yule and Jim McIntosh. He's to back. Jim, thank you for being so patient. We got through this somehow. We're near for sure, but all the budgies kind of kept the bandies together on the wires. So, as I said, congratulations again.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. So, hud for it, my friends, and the Leeds in safe hands.
The Leeds in safe hands, and we'll mark me a roads into it and continue celebrating that we have in our heritage. So, on behalf of Richie and myself, Richie,
aye.
Thank you for laughing. Bye the new and dinner pit off. This is the music on Kenmure's On an Awa.